listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
The other day, I had a client ask me, you know, kind of what are the indicators? How will I know and what should I expect of the process? The person said, you know, if it's been this long since we've been in trouble, how long is it going to take to get out? Is there some rule of thumb on how that goes? It's an interesting question. It's asking, can you look into the crystal ball? And it's actually doing something that I suggest you don't do, which is read the tea leaves. You know, try to figure out what something means. How long has something been in place? Does that mean something? It's kind of a diagnostic, and really it's a prognostic question. And my response is that that's an impossible thing to answer. And the indicator for some of us is we believe like doctors, you know, they'll say you have X amount of time to live. And we think, oh gosh, they have some way of giving us a prognosis. The fact is that that's rarely the case. When I was sick, which has now been, we're coming up on exactly 16 years ago when I first got sick, it was about 4 months, 3 or 4 months before we knew what I had. And the prognosis of that was pretty bad. The prognosis was that I was going to become disabled and eventually what I had would kill me. Well, so far I've proven that to be wrong. And it's not that the diagnosis was wrong. The doctor was correct on what I had. It's just that the prognosis wasn't right. And so what that reminded me of is my days as a hospital chaplain. A lot of times I would sit with people who would get a horrible prognosis. They'd already had a terrible diagnosis, and then the prognosis, the outcome, you know, that was what kind of woke them up. And what I noticed is rarely was the prognosis correct. Now, a few times it was. In fact, the closer it was to the end, the more accurate the doctor was. If the doctor said, you've only got a few days to live or maybe a couple of weeks to live, that generally is much more accurate than saying you've got 6 months, maybe a year to live. The reason that doctors do that is a couple of things. One is they're relying on some past history over a broad spectrum of people. But that doesn't mean it applies to an individual. Remember, statistics averages out what happens over a group of people, but not what happens to an individual person. And that's why statistics are so dangerous. For instance, the statistic is that about half of marriages end in divorce. That's the statistic. Yet you can beat the statistic because it's not just about the number, right? It's what people do. It's how people respond and act. And so it's not just that if you flip a coin at your marriage, it will determine whether you stay together or not. There are some other factors that are within our control. And that is true even when somebody has a medical diagnosis. You know, what if they change their lifestyle? What if they get better treatment? What if they do nothing? What if they change their lifestyle for the worst? That's going to change the outcome. In other words, the prognosis is very hard to tell from this point. Now, my grandfather had cancer and a couple of times actually graduated from hospice. He'd been told that he only had a little bit of time to live, and they put him in hospice and he got better several times. Same with my grandmother. And so they beat the odds, probably for lots of reasons. But the fact is that even though the doctor was correct about their diagnosis, not so correct about the prognosis. And that taught me a lesson, not to try to foretell the future about what the outcome is. And so I can't tell you, for instance, if you've been in crisis this long, that it's going to last this long. But I can tell you this, there are some places where I see turning points in the process. Now, there are a number of turning points that are outside of your control. Today, I don't want to talk about the turning points that are outside of your control. For instance, a turning point outside of your control maybe is that something happens between the two of you that kind of brings you together. Could it be that something happens between you and it pulls you apart too? Years ago, I'd been working with a couple for quite a while and I just could not get any traction. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get any traction, but they just were not making progress. Then one week, they both came in and everything was different. They had reconciled. They were doing beautifully together. And I said, what happened? What changed? And the simple fact was there had been a health scare. The health scare was long enough that they both were able to reflect on what matters, what's important. And they realized that they had been dealing with things that weren't so important to them. They had been dealing with things that were more trivial. And when that was put in perspective, everything changed. But I've also dealt with couples that looked like they were doing pretty well, and then something happened that put them into a crisis and it spun out of control. And that tells me that these outside things are unpredictable on the outcome. There are some other outside pieces that you don't have control over. For instance, a spouse may be moving closer to an affair partner. A spouse may have already started a process that you don't know about. A spouse may have already decided and is just slowly telling you about what's going on. All of those change the outcome for you, but they're outside of your control. So today I want to talk about three points that are entirely within your control. Three turning points that you can do starting today, starting right now. So let's just jump into these three. The first one is that you stop chasing. One of the things that happens with people who want to save their marriage when a spouse doesn't is they get into a mode of chasing, and it's possible that that has been a mode of operation for a long time, but it seems to accelerate. Why? Well, because you're afraid of losing something that you want to hold on to, so it makes sense that it would activate that piece of you. There's only one problem. When you chase, the other person flees. When you pursue, the other person flees. Now, what that does, unfortunately, it's kind of like the prey instinct on a wild animal. It makes you go faster, right? And so when you start into a chase mode and your spouse begins to distance, you speed up. The problem is when you speed up, so do they. And so part of what often happens in the process of trying to save a marriage is people get into a pattern of chasing. Now, this is from a good place. You know, it's about wanting to connect with the spouse. It's just not from a good strategy. The approach is what gets you in trouble. So what you want to do is to be able to work on connecting without chasing. One of the things I've done is create a number of ways of doing that, of how do you connect with somebody without chasing them? In other words, without trying to pull them. And that's the interesting thing about a chase is you're trying to pull them towards you rather than slowing down and letting them decide to come back in because it's safer. If they don't feel safe because of the chase, they stay away. So we work on ways of creating connection. That's part of the platform of my Save the Marriage methodology. We try to allow the other person enough space that it then begins to feel safe for them to pull closer. I use the analogy kind of a cat. You know, if you chase a cat around trying to pet the cat is going to avoid you at all costs. But many times if you sit down and make yourself a little inviting, they're happy to come over and sit on your lap and let you pet them at that point. But if you make a sudden move, what happens? They flee. So part of this chase flee thing you have to do is recognize it for yourself so that you're not creating more of a chase. This pursuer avoider kind of pattern digs into two of the big fears that we have in our lives, the fear of intimacy and the fear of abandonment. The problem in a marriage is that the fear of intimacy and the fear of abandonment can play against each other. When one is feeling a fear of intimacy and pulls away, it triggers the feeling of abandonment, causing the other person to kind of chase them down. Likewise, if you're feeling a sense of abandonment, and so you try to pull up to a spouse, that could trigger their own feelings of fears of intimacy, and so they flee. This is the dynamic, one of the dynamics that I point out in the Save the Marriage system, that when those get to be in play, they can accelerate each other. Now, what I want to be clear about is that these are fears, not realities. The fear of intimacy is that you will lose yourself, lose your identity, lose your selfhood into the relationship. The fear of abandonment is that you will lose something that's important to you that you can't do without. And the fact is that a relationship doesn't have to take away your individuality. And also the fact is that you can survive whatever happens if somebody continues to pull away. The fears, though, trigger that action. And so part of the task is to make sure that you control that fear of abandonment. So one of the things I know is that the people who are likely listening, meaning you, to this podcast, and likely using my program, meaning you or should be you, tend to be the people who are feeling the sense of the fear of abandonment. That means your spouse right now is having that fear of intimacy, of losing themselves. And so they're trying to stake their claim and say, this is me. I'm an individual, right? And the danger of that is that as you get into chase mode, they get into flee mode. You become the pursuer. They become the avoider. You're acting out of your fear of abandonment. They're acting out of their fear of intimacy. And faster the process goes. So the turning point is when people can stop chasing. Let me say that more clearly and pointedly. The turning point is when you stop chasing. Not stop connecting, because a lot of times when I say that, people say, well, you know, if I'm not trying to, you know, kind of move towards them, then nothing's going to happen. Well, you can actually work on connecting without chasing. You can work on connecting more like that inviting of creating a place where the person has emotional space to move back towards you. So our approach is to make sure you're not chasing. In fact, it's one of the core things that my coaches look for. If you're chasing, they're going to call you on that and back you up from that. You may not like it, but it's a necessary step to be able to back away from the chase mode in order to give the other person enough room to find some ways back into the relationship. So turning point number one is when somebody stops chasing the other person. Suddenly there's room for the relationship. Turning point number two is when a person takes responsibility. Now, that's a very loaded term. Usually when I say that, immediately the person says, you're blaming me? You're blaming me for this? So first, I want to define responsibility. Responsibility, break that word in half. Responsibility, the ability to respond. That's what this is about. It's our ability to respond. We have the ability to choose different responses in our life. And the question is whether you're taking advantage of your capacity of choosing to take responsibility. Responsibility, the ability to respond. So I can respond differently to the situation than I have in the past. So let's kind of change that, because oftentimes that term was used when we're kids. And, you know, a parent's got us and they're upset with us. And they look around and they say, okay, who's responsible for this? So then we confuse that responsible piece with blame. Blame is looking at who you might be able to point the finger at. Blame is looking for the person that you can say, you are at fault here. That's not what this turning point is about. What I've noticed is a lot of times in marriages that are in trouble, one person is waiting for the other person to kind of come to their senses, or waiting for the other person to say, hey, this is all my bad. I'm sorry. Let me fix this. The problem is that doesn't happen very often, certainly in the early stages of the relationship. So when you take responsibility, the responsibility is you're saying, I'm going to figure this out. Yes, we haven't been in a good place, but I'm going to figure this out. One of the core pieces of this turning point is when I get clients to write an apology letter. So let me be very clear that my apology letter is not you saying, this is all my fault. Everything that's wrong with us is me. Mea culpa. I'm so sorry. It is a chance to say, you know what? I've realized that I was responsible for these things. I am at fault for these things and I'm going to change them. I apologize. I'm sorry I did this. What we do is we go through kind of the relationship history and ask the question, where do you think you fell short? Specifically, without adding on but my spouse did this. See, it's very easy for us to be able to say, well, I did this, but I did it because of this. That rarely lands very well with a spouse. The spouse who's resistant doesn't want to have much to do with hearing how they are at fault. And that's okay, because that's not about responsibility. Responsibility is being able to say, I'm responsible to turn this around. I'm also responsible for my actions in the past. You see, one of the things we often like to do is pretend that all we're doing is reacting to other things, but we're always choosing that response. So just for a moment, let me just kind of talk about control. We humans like to try to control things that we can't control. And we do a pretty bad job of controlling the things we could control. So if you think about it, imagine a big circle around you of all the things that you are concerned about. It's your circle of concern. If you've got kids, it's your kids, parents, siblings, the weather, your spouse's actions, the politics, whatever it is that kind of gets you going, that's in your circle of concern. The problem is you don't have any control over that. You can't control the things that are external to you. You can't control what your kids do. And I know that's a tough one for parents to hear. And sometimes people argue, but that's the fact. You can't control the actions of a child. If you've ever been in a store with a 2 or 3 year old throwing a fit, you recognize you can't control the fit. Now, you can control whether you stay in the store, or you can control whether you reward that behavior or punish that behavior, but you didn't control that tantrum. Or let's take another one. Maybe you say, you know what? My kids got to follow what I say. So I tell them they've got to be honest with everybody. How do you enforce that? As soon as they're out of your sight, they're lying to their friend or their teacher or someone else. Could you control their behavior? No. Same with a spouse. A lot of times I see people trying to control their spouse's behavior so that the spouse is who they want them to be and how they want them to act, which tends to not get us very far. So those are the things external to us are in our circle of concern. We have concerns about them, but we can't control them. So let's talk about that little tiny circle right around you that is your circle of control. You can control your attitude, your aspirations, and your actions. Attitude, aspirations, and actions. Your aspirations are the things that you want. Now notice, I didn't say you had control over your fears. Fears pop up in our head. That's the way our brain works. You have control over how much energy you give the fear, but you don't have control over whether it pops into your mind or not. But you can decide what you want to move towards, what goals you have, what dreams you have. Those are your aspirations. You get to choose those and choose whether you move towards them or not. Even if you've never chosen them before, they are within your control. Today, you could say, hey, you know what? This is what I want to do, and I'm going to move towards it. That's your choice. You also get to control your attitude. And I don't mean to always be positive, but to have the belief that you can figure this out and you'll keep moving forward. That's your attitude, your direction that you choose. Now, you can also choose, meaning it's there for your choice, that nothing's ever going to work out, that this is a failure, you can never get what you want. That's a choice that most people don't see as a choice. So we get to choose where we fall on that attitude scale, all the way from I'm a failure, I can't do anything, to no matter what, I'm moving forward. You get to choose that. The other piece you get to choose are your actions, what you say, what you do, what you don't say, what you don't do. Those are the pieces that we get to control. And those are the places where we can show responsibility. If you're writing an apology letter, those pieces can be in your apology letter as your place of saying, I'm stepping up and saying, I was responsible for what I did and said, or what I didn't say, what I didn't do, how I didn't take on a good attitude, how I didn't take on higher aspirations. All of those can be within that place. So one of the marking turning points for that is that apology letter. I talk about that a little bit in the system. I do a thorough training of it in the VIP program, the VIP virtual coaching program, because a lot of times people need some coaching on that. If you think you've got the apology letter, though, that's great. If you need more help with that, when you're grabbing the Save the Marriage system, I do offer you, for the only time you can ever get that week free, but I offer a free week of VIP virtual coaching. You just have to claim it when I offer it. So if you're thinking, hey, you know what? I need some help. I need that system. and you're also thinking, hey, you know what? I need to know how to do that apology and take responsibility. Go to SaveTheMarriage.com, grab the system, grab the virtual coaching when I offer it, and get going. Which brings us to the third turning point, and that's when people decide to show up. Truly show up. Now, not just like be there, but truly show up. For me, this is the term of fully bringing our full self into the relationship. Sometimes we kind of hide. We pull back. We don't grow. We get stuck. We hide behind things like anger and resentment. We find places where we are stuck. So let's talk a little bit about the starting point for showing up. I'm not going to go through a full process of that. I have talked about that on my Thriveology podcast and actually on other Save the Marriage podcasts. But one of the beginning points for showing up is letting go of your anger and your hurt. Yeah, I know it's very hurtful when somebody says, I don't want to be with you anymore. And you've got to let that go and recognize that that's from their place of pain too. The same with anger. One of the things that a lot of people don't recognize is that anger is actually a secondary emotion. The primary emotion is that hurt. And it comes out as anger. And anger does one thing with other people. It keeps them at arm's length. That's why we do anger. Unfortunately, sometimes that gets in our way. If somebody is causing a problem, anger can be a repelling force, right? If somebody is acting in a threatening way, your anger may give you kind of a shield. The problem is when that is put on somebody you're trying to love, it pushes them away too. And so we don't really show up very well when we're angry. So part of what you want to do is recognize that that anger is a part of hurt and release the hurt. The way you release the hurt is by being empathetic with the other person. Remember that we all do the best we can given where we are. One of my core beliefs about people, we all do the best we can given where we are. Not that that's not optimal. We're not at our best, but we're doing the best we can given where we are. Now, the next thing of showing up is deciding to be courageous. I've noticed that people can either be courageous or be the victim. But you can't do both. Now, I understand that victim is a role people play. Sometimes we are the victim of circumstances. If I'm walking down the street and somebody hits me, I'm not playing a role. I'm the victim of the accident. But there's something that often happens beyond that when we play the role of victim, that everything bad happens to me, I had nothing to do with this, life isn't fair. Those are victim places. And they get in the way of our courageous actions. Now, I want to say one thing that's the same in both victim and courage, and that is fear. That's the fundamental part of both. We play victim because we're fearful of being able to deal with something. So we just say, there's nothing I can do here. I'm the victim here. I'm stuck. Courage, still have fear, but choose to act anyway. We choose to step into it and do courageous action. And let me tell you that I believe that working on your marriage is courageous action. We live in a culture that says, let it go, forget about it, move on. It's disposable. But being courageous because you say, hey, there's something important here. I don't want to just let this go. That's courageous. You might be the only person in your circle of friends or family that still feels like you ought to work on the relationship. That's courageous. They probably don't want to see you hurting anymore. But sometimes we fall into the hurting place and play the role of victim in ways that don't help us, that don't move our life forward. So showing up, part of that is courageous effort. And the other part of showing up is being present, like truly present, like in the moment, like not thinking about what happened, a month ago or two weeks ago or a year ago, 2 years ago or 15 years ago, nor worrying about what's going to happen next month or next week or next year or 10 years from now, but being present in this present moment. Present in the present is one of the key points of showing up. When you're present in the present, you're probably not expressing anger and hurt. You're probably not doing the victim role, but you're truly showing up with your best self. Now, in order to access that best self, one of the things that we have as part of the Save the Marriage system is a 20-minute get started session with a coach, because the coach can help you access that best self that you have within you. We all have it. We just have to step into it. So if you think that you have some places where you're stuck in making those turning points, This is a great time to grab the Save the Marriage system. If you've got the system, it's time to begin looking for those turning points, to work on stopping the chasing, to work on taking responsibility, to work on truly showing up. Right now, that's part of what we're throwing into the Save the Marriage system. I'm offering you a free week of the VIP program just by raising your hand when I tell you, here it is. Do you want it? Do you want to join for, you know, to give it a trial? Give it a try for a week. Maybe you'll stay longer, but at least you get a week of that coaching and that help. And we also give you that 20-minute session with a coach. It's not automatic. You have to claim it. We're not going to contact you because you may not want it. But if you want it, on your download page, there's a big button that just says, I'm ready for coaching. And you click it, fill out a form, and one of my coaches will be in contact. But there is a starting point. The starting point, and that's true for everything in life. There's a starting point that requires your action. If you're ready for something different, if you're tired of getting the same place that you've been, if you're ready for something greater than it's been in your marriage, in fact, if you're ready for a marriage that you're going to treasure and your spouse is going to treasure, not just one you're trying to save and limp along, but something you're going to transform, the starting point is SaveTheMarriage.com. Just go to SaveTheMarriage.com, look through what I'm offering, take advantage of that, or maybe you've already looked through it and you're ready to get started. Then go to SaveTheMarriage.com/grab. That's SaveTheMarriage.com/grab. Let's get you started. Let's get you to these turning points. Let's get this turned around. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.